Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
You're very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast at Sideshow on Twitter. I have to think about this. You'd think that I wouldn't have to think about it. And now that I'm saying think, I'm reminded of when I used to live in Scotland and they used to get me to say 33 and a third all the time. And I still don't understand why. Francis Tophill is the presenter, not only for ITV's Love Your Garden, but also on BBC Gardener's World. And you, wonderful people, listeners of the Sideshow, can go and see Francis live at Birmingham in the NEC. Gardeners World Live takes place the 14th to the 17th of June, and tickets are on sale as we speak. Francis, how are you, my dear?
I'm very well, thank you. Yes, yeah. Just finished two very grueling days, so enjoying a day off.
What were you doing, Francis?
We've just begun filming Love Your Garden again, so it's very, very busy up in Nottingham. But I've come to Sheffield where my sister lives, so I'm just now spending the day at her house relaxing, which is nice.
Because we were speaking off air, I'm going to get myself into trouble all over again, but I mentioned to you that a PR girl a long time ago said to me that I was only short of saying that her sister was better looking, and now I find out that you're in your sister's house.
I'm one of three girls though, so you know, we always get compared. I'm used to it. No offence taken if anyone thinks any one of the others is better looking.
No, well, I'm not getting involved. I'm in way over my head. I've got four sisters of my own and three brothers. And
oh really? Wow.
But let's skew on past me and let's get to you. Francis, to be quite fair about this, you're quite popular.
Well, that's very nice to hear. I never know. I don't do much social media and stuff, so I don't see what people say. I think it's probably best just to not see what people say, just in case they say horrible things.
Well, I don't really pay attention to what anybody says, and as most of the Sideshow listeners would know, I'm literally quite happy lying on my back looking at the clouds pretending to eat candy floss out of the sky. But you can't take away from the fact, I guess, that there is a young girl who has done quite well for herself, and I'm not on the Gardeners World Live stage, to put in context, Francis.
Well, I'll swap. It's scary. It's a strange thing, as I'm sure any gardener will tell you, that you go from learning about plants and spending most of your time with plants to suddenly being in front of an audience. Of a couple of weeks ago, I was doing a talk for the Hardy Plant Society, and it was 360 people. You know, it's not necessarily a natural environment for someone like me, so it can be quite sort of nerve-wracking, but it's all fun, you know. It's really interesting, different experience from what I imagined my career would be.
What did you expect it to be, Francis, when you first started out? To put it into Sideshow bingo terms, Peter Donegan used to grow plants under his bed when he was 5 years of age, studied horticulture, mm-hmm. Now builds gardens for a living. I obviously mm-hmm. still have a face for radio, insert joke here. Francis Tophill used to something, went and did something, and is now more popular and doesn't have a face for radio. I'm insulting myself here. What are the bits in the middle, Francis?
It's hard to say where it started. I think it's partly hereditary. I never really did any gardening at all. I worked in shops when I left school. I didn't do any sort of university bits or anything. I went to art college for a year and did jewellery making and pottery and stuff, and kind of liked it. But basically, and you'll probably hear in a minute, because it's rainy here in Sheffield, and there's a Velux window above me. So actually it was hearing rain on a window, which will probably happen any second now here, that made me kind of think, oh, I actually quite like being outside. And I was about 20 when this happened, and there was a job advertised as an apprentice down the road. And I kind of thought, oh, well, I'll go and see that, maybe, you know. And, you know, there are those jobs when you don't want to get the job because you have to make a decision about it. And then there are those other jobs when you turn up and you go, oh, my God, this is the job. I want this job. And it was just that. I kind of met the head gardener at the sanitation, which is where I studied, and he walked me around, and I just thought, this is what I want to do. And I kind of imagined I'd be garden design, but the more I did the plant stuff, I just like the being outside and the digging and the planting and the pruning. I love pruning and, you know, seeing things grow, investing your creative energy into something and then watching it do something completely different, and then working with it, you know. It's, and working with people as well, I think it's a really, really interesting job, the kind of varied people that you find yourself working with, whether they're people who have been, you know, service users of charities. I've worked with a lot of different charities in my time, or people who are volunteering just because they want to meet people, or, you know, all kinds of varied people. And you can see the people grow, I think, as much as the plants when you work in that. So from there, I then went on to Edinburgh Botanic Garden, where I studied because I wanted to learn more about the plants. And I did a degree up in Edinburgh, which is where I got emailed by a TV production company looking for someone to work with Alan Titchmarsh, and me and some friends all thought it would be quite fun to go down to London and see what happened. And this is what happened. I'm not sure if fun is the word now, but it's different.
But Frances, emails like that don't come through everybody's door on one hand. And I think in a world gone mad, a little bit mad, I say, or maybe it's just Peter's world, there are a lot of people who have almost like an X Factor type dream to be on television. And I always find it the ultimate compliment when somebody says, to quote my mom, "I like the cut of your jib. We like how you do things. We like how you conduct yourself." And you never noticed maybe that you were, if you'll allow me use an analogy, that you were dancing away on your own in the corner of the nightclub or disco, but somebody came across and pulled you out of the crowd, almost like that Bruce Springsteen video. I can't remember the girl's name. And
Courtney Cox, isn't it?
That's the one. Yeah. The point to make is that it wasn't intentional for you to end up where you ended up.
Massively unintentional. I remember some very weird little incidents where I would come from, you know, I mean, it is obviously very hard work doing a degree, but maybe come from a night out in Edinburgh with my friends one day, get on the train the next day and find myself in a hotel with Alan Titchmarsh, who I remember watching as a kid, you know, on Ground Force, and just thinking something weird's happened to my life now. This is not what I expected. But it's, you know, it's really interesting. It's quite an honour, and I do feel the awareness that a lot of people would cut their right arm off to be in the position I'm in, and I have just happened to find myself in that position. But I think on the flip side of that, it's also a very transient position. You know, the media, as anyone will tell you, is fickle, and so I kind of feel like I'm philosophical about it and think I'll ride the wave all the while it's there. But I know that gardening is what I love, and so when the media stuff stops, I know I'll be really happy going back to just being a gardener again, which is quite nice because either way, it's quite good. You know?
And look, I take all of this, but at the same token, when I was building gardens that were winning shiny things, I think there was a point where the TV media stuff came in at a rate of, and I remember talking to one of the TV producers, and I did say to her, look, I really just want to start getting my hands dirty again. For real, in brackets, was the point that I made. And I'm again, I'll say it, I'm quite content reading old Irish fables about the little people dancing underneath the flowers whilst I'm lying in amongst a field of poppies. And that makes perfect sense in Peter's head, but not entirely to everybody else's. Did you ever have the conversation, Frances, where you turned around and said, the point at which they saw you dancing on your own and said, she's got the thing that we're looking for, and then you maybe turn around some moons later and say, what was that?
I haven't actually ever asked that question. I don't know. It was all a bit of a mad... I mean, the whole of our course got this email, and about five of us went down, I think it was, me and my closest friend. And it was all a bit of a strange experience. We went to Capel Manor College in the snow and just had to talk to a camera and a producer about why we like gardening. That was kind of it, really. I never asked them what they saw, or, you know, I remember coming away and thinking, that is really hard. I do not want that job. I don't know what it was they saw. I think I struggle to be presentery. Maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. I'm not very good at being cool, or pretending to be a way that I'm not. I just kind of am the way I am, and sometimes I put my foot in my mouth and sometimes I don't. But, you know, I hope that's what people don't mind to see, someone just being themselves. But I don't know. I'll go away and ask that question now.
Yeah, Peter Donegan said to ask. Yeah, I've got a very long list of questions. I'll put in some interval music here and we'll get back to the serious bit. What were the things that you did before, I won't say achievements in a television sense, not even in an award sense, but where were you prior to the television audition, if I can call it that? Had you built a garden? Had you designed gardens? What was your forte intended to be?
I'm very much like a kind of dabbler. So I don't think I was destined to have a specialism particularly, but my real love is of being outside and working in an outdoor space. I love art and creativity, but I don't think garden design was going to be my thing. More or less from the first week of actually starting my apprenticeship, I kind of discounted it really. I like the doing bit. So I was always sort of heading more towards either historic gardening. That's what I'd done on a practical skills experience as part of a team, or towards more of the botany and conservation. I'm a really passionate sort of conservationist. So I was in my second year of my degree when I began the TV thing, and I was kind of weighing up those two options. I would say the thought of traveling and researching and preserving rare endangered plants or mosses or even fungi. I was thinking along those sorts of lines. Would have been a lovely, you know, that's kind of a love. But at the same time, working in a garden with people, like I said to you earlier on, people are as much what I love about this job as plants. And I've worked a lot in the kind of charity sector. And even when I was up in Edinburgh, I would volunteer. And I still do volunteer whenever I can in gardens, which often have a kind of charitable spin on them. So that community element as well. So it was definitely that, a hands-on practical career in either just horticulture or in conservation.
Am I correct in saying this? Have you written two books, Frances?
Yes, that's right. Two books.
And they're an extremely different title, I guess, to what maybe you had envisaged based on what you just said to me there.
Yeah. I think the books, the titles of the books were both devised between myself and the publishing company, Kyle. And I guess it kind of inevitably comes with being the age I am, that people like to make me, I'm a person who can hopefully encourage younger people to get involved in horticulture. And I don't mind that, because I'm actually really passionate about that. Like I said, I began my horticultural journey at the age of 20, and I really would have loved to have started it earlier on. So I contacted when I was first, you know, I suppose, doing media work, I contacted the RHS campaign for school gardening and asked them about volunteering for them, because it's something that I felt really passionate about, getting more gardening into schools. And they also do other centres, not just schools, colleges, you know, public community spaces, and get people to have a go, even if they hate it. I'm really kind of a believer in that. If you hate doing something, it informs you as much as if you love doing something about what you want to do. And I just sort of felt it was really important to get young people or novices involved in something that they've never considered. So I have no problem with being kind of the young, accessible person that might make people of my own age or younger think, oh, maybe I'll try. But that's kind of the angle that that both of the books are. They're for people who are maybe young professionals, maybe have their first garden that they actually want to do something with and don't know where to begin. Or maybe with the second book, they don't even have a garden at all and they want to do something a bit more interesting. You know, it would be lovely to be able to write a book about conservation of mosses. But actually, like I said, that I haven't got into the expertise of that yet. One day in the future, maybe I will. But at the moment, you know, I'm very happy. I really enjoy writing the books and I'm really happy to do it in a way that people will hopefully find accessible.
What were the titles on both of them while I have you, Frances?
The first is First Time Gardener and the second is The Container Gardener.
So take me a step further then, because you ended up presenting, I gather, post Love Your Garden, you ended up presenting on Gardener's World.
Yes, I did. I mean, pretty massive honour, really. Garden as well, there's the programme that I've always, you know, even as an apprentice, my homework was to watch Gardener's World. It's, you know, a real honour, a lot of pressure. And it was really terrifying because I didn't realise I had a job interview until I was actually sitting in front of the producers and the researchers. I was told I was just going to have a meeting with them and chat about how they, you know, how maybe Gardener's World could become a little bit more accessible to young people. So I thought I was just going for a coffee. It became really apparent that I was being interviewed for the job and I got really nervous. But yeah, it's been a real treat, really. And this year I have an allotment. They've kind of managed to find someone in Bristol who's prepared to share his allotment with me. So I've been waiting for a long time to have an allotment. And it's really nice that I've now got that. A bit scary that it's being televised because a lot of our seeds haven't germinated. but you know, it's really good.
What are you growing on the allotment at this moment in time, Frances?
Well, at the moment we've sown a lot of wildflower. It's a really, really tough site. It's really heavy clay and there's been nothing there at all for ages. So there's nothing to work with. It's all from scratch. So we have sown some sweet corn, some kale, wildflowers. I've gone at home, I'm growing sweet peas and chickpeas and basil and lots of tomatoes. I think it's in a couple of weeks' time we're filming the next one and I'll be taking all my seedlings along and hopefully planting them out. Hopefully the weather will be a bit more reliable by then.
Was there an element in it, Frances, when you chose that allotment plot and space that the producers turned around and said, A, it has terrible soil? Because to be quite fair about this, when I look at Gardener's World, Monty's soil, generally speaking, is the bee's knees. Uh-huh. It puts me to shame. And half of my head is saying, is it a case of that it is BBC, therefore it has to be perfect? Or did they turn around in your case to give it the opposite and say, well, it's the worst that you've ever seen? Brilliant, we'll have some of this. And you're saying, no, you don't understand. I'm Frances Tophill. I can't have this. It has to be perfect. We need to go to grow Guatemalan quail eggs. That's obviously not a real plant. You understand me?
I know what you're saying. No, it wasn't produced, I think. We genuinely got there. There was a guy, Luke, who was happy to have us along and he hadn't even looked at certain parts of it before we got there. So it was not produced. They were very keen on having it genuine because they wanted to represent what normal people getting an allotment space will potentially have to face. We were quite lucky in that it wasn't that weedy, but it was very heavy clay. You know, hopefully in a couple of years this allotment site will be much better, but it's just been completely unworked and they wanted it to be just a genuine, you know, hence if the seedlings don't germinate or if we have blight or if things damp off or something, they'll feature all that because they kind of want it to be real and show what it's actually like and what it actually involves.
Damping off is one of the ones that I remember learning in very early years in college. All of my seedlings came up, but then they just keeled over. For people who start growing their own where they haven't done the good husbandry, all of a sudden, yeah. Peter's a walking genius because he knows what damping off is. Take me sideways, Frances, because the NEC in Birmingham, 14th to the 17th of June, what can people expect?
The idea with Gardener's World Live is making it really accessible to people, normal gardeners. Nothing is sort of hugely overpriced. The show gardens that are built there are not conceptual. They're supposed to be based on an ordinary size plot with achievable designs and ideas. And I think that's what people can expect, to go and hopefully find some inspiration about what they can realistically kind of do with their outdoor space. I am going to be on the Make Every Space Count stage. I know that so far. I don't know what else I'll be doing. If I remember from last year, it was quite a whirlwind. I had to do a talk with Toby Buckland, which was quite scary, although he was very good, so it made me much more comfortable. But I'd only met him once before, and it was quite terrifying having to go up and do a talk with someone you've only met once. So I don't know exactly what's in store, but it will be, yeah, a really interesting and kind of varied event. But for people who just have a real interest in gardening and want to develop, I think, their own spaces as much as anything else.
Do you know what you're going to be talking about, Frances?
I'm going to be talking about the allotment feature on Gardener's World. and how it's going. But no, not the rest of it yet. I haven't been told which bits I'll be on. And normally I kind of will tailor any talk I do to what the theme is of the stage or what the kind of audience they'll expect will be.
Sorry, I thought you were going to say something there.
No, that's fine.
God, yeah, wow. I feel like I'm on first dates of long distance, that television.
Is that on the list of things you don't like, or is that acceptable for
us? I don't know. I keep on getting asked about it by mates of mine, and I haven't a clue what they do in their time. I like goofing down in the shed and making things, and they're asking me, have you seen first dates?
I don't know anyone that doesn't like it, so, you know, maybe try it. Maybe get a TV in the shed.
this is not where I expected this conversation to go. But Frances, are any of the rest of your family into horticulture?
Yeah, it's quite a long sort of history of it. My grandma on my mum's side and my mum were both into it. I remember, you know, being a kid and the smell of kind of tomatoes growing and stuff, but I was never involved in helping. My granddad on my dad's side was a farm worker and passionate gardener all his life, but again, I was never really involved. So yeah, it's sort of a historical interest, but no one of my generation. It's my older sister though has just got into it, and it's funny, I always get phone calls from friends and from now my sister as well, going like, no, gardening is actually really fun. And I kind of go, yeah, yeah, it's good, isn't it? And they kind of go, yeah, no, I mean, I always thought it was a bit whatever, but I'm doing it now and it's really fun, isn't it? So yeah, my sister's just got it. She's just got her, about a year ago, she had her first garden and she's got so into it. And she's very different from me. She's a big researcher, so she'll come up and ask me all these things and she's common names, and I don't know if you get this, but the whole common names versus Latin names, and I find Latin names so much easier because I know exactly what people are talking about, whereas common names are so varied and you're going to have five different names for the same plant depending on where you're from. And so yeah, she comes up to me with all these common names of herbs. She's got very into herbs and she asks me about them and I just have to go, I don't know what that is. Can you give me the Latin? And yeah, so she wants me to teach her as much as I can about gardening, and she's even thinking of becoming a gardener herself. So yeah, it's something that's spreading, but it's not a family thing that we've all been involved in. It's just always something that's been going on in the background. And I know I was aware as a child that people did it, but wasn't really allowed or encouraged to help.
I think yesterday I had a conversation and it was twofold. Somebody had a laurel hedge and a cherry tree.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden I'm having this conversation of, is it Prunus lusitanica? Is it Prunus laurisarasus? Is it Prunus aminagawa? Apologies to you listening for the very long names. That's not to show off. I really only know how to speak in the botanical sense, yep, of the game. And when I ended up in the States, that paid massive dividends.
Oh, hugely. And I've had the same thing even going abroad to countries where they don't speak English as the first language. I went out to France and did some woofing out there, doing a grape harvest and stuff, and Cape Verde Islands. And in those situations, everyone still speaks in botanical Latin. And even though maybe the accent takes a couple of seconds to work out what they're saying or what I'm saying, we get there. And if you start speaking in common names, it's impossible. So yeah, I'm with you on it. And having said that, I understand that people find it alienating and they think it's hard, but I think it's a mental block, I think, rather than an actual block. And so many, as we call Latin names, are actually Greek or even Gaelic, or, you know, they're from all different kinds of languages. It's not just Latin. So people will often know more than they think they know anyway. If they know any kind of French, or if they know any German, or, you know, there are roots from everywhere.
In a nutshell, in the Irish language, which is always a little bit more poetic, or it brings you off on a tangent where you never intended to go, a bit like a 17th century estate, the translation of, for example, where I live is Ballybohol, translated into Irish, it's Ballybacalia, translated back into English, it's the town of the staff or the town of the crozier, which is where St. Patrick's Crozier used to reside, and so it tells you a little bit more about it, and for that sole reason I fell entirely in love with it.
Yeah, I completely agree. There is some merit in common names with that, especially regionally, and something like a herb or something that's been used a lot for medicinal reasons or anything like that. The common name can obviously tell you something about the history of that plant. But you're right, if you're a gardener telling you whether it's hairy, which is essentially what a lot of Latin names do, or whether it has big flowers, or whether it has small leaves, or whether it likes to be in the shade, that's what Latin names tell you.
My favourite one was Ligustrum ovalifolium aurea variegata, which is essentially privet hedge.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I just sound more intelligent when I say it in Latin. That's really all there is to it.
Yeah, but it makes sense, you know. It's with round leaves and variegated leaves of a golden colour, you know. That's what that tells you, and it's pretty useful if you're doing a garden design. It's handy.
Except I haven't planted a privet hedge in about 25 years, but we'll park that one to one side.
Fair enough. I was going to say, I remember being a kid and having stick insects, and they multiplied massively to the point when we couldn't look after them. I remember my mum let them all go in the privet hedge, one of the neighbours' house. That's my main memory of privet.
Okay, well, mine is probably ties in somewhere with Cliff Richard playing in the background, but we'll park that one entirely to one side and add him to the Shania Twain list. No offence to Cliff if he listens to the Sideshow. Well, here's a funny one for you, Francis, because when I'm building gardens for other people, I can't listen to music at all. When I'm working in my own garden, or as we would call it, downtime, I tend to put the stereo on and stick the headphones in.
When I was working as an apprentice, I loved it. I would get audiobooks, and I loved mowing day, which was a Thursday. All day, you'd be on the end of a mower, walking mower, and I would stick my headphones in under my ear defenders and just listen to a whole audiobook in a day, and I loved that. But now I think less and less I do. I hear a lot of music and a lot of radio when I'm driving around the country. So when I'm in a garden now, I like to either sort of speak to people I'm with or just listen to nothing, you know, quiet. And when we're making TV gardening programs as well, it's always quite a noisy environment. You're thinking a lot about what the next thing is, or you're chatting to people about what's going to happen, or a director's chatting to you about what's going to happen, or if we're doing a garden makeover, then there's drilling and hammering, and, you know, five different companies, one to build the shed, one to put the electrics, you know, all at the same time, and it can be a noisy world. So I quite like the switching off. I love music. I'm a big music fan, but more when I can dance. not when I have to be actually pricking something out without breaking all the stems.
Who's the latest that you listen to, Francis?
Bruce Springsteen was a good reference to me. I've always been a big fan. Actually, I was raised on Irish music, the Saw Doctors, like, as a
oh,
kid.
Oh, good Lord.
I know.
You
I know.
Poor child.
I know, it's terrible. So yeah, I was. That's kind of my roots musically. My dad's a piano accordionist, and he would play in skiffle bands and Irish tribute bands. So I've grown up with similarly tragic taste.
Is your dad Irish, Francis?
He's not, no. He had a really good friend who was, and he was the bass player in this band. He joined it and then just, you know, jumped on board with the culture. My stepmom is Irish.
The Sideshow's done 370 episodes, and this is the first reference ever to the Saw Doctor, so you do know that.
Really? Well, I'm proud. I'm proud to carry that honour.
Oh my God, the Sideshow does end up in some very strange places. Francis Tophill will be at the BBC Gardeners World Live stage Sunday the 17th of June. BBC Gardeners World Live, however, takes place the 14th to the 17th of June at Birmingham NEC. Tickets are on sale as we speak. Francis Tophill, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much. It's been great. Thanks, Peter.
for you listening at home. Anything you need at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow, sideshow.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll chat next week. Take care. Bye.